According to the experts on such matters, it's considered impolite to talk about religion and politics at dinner parties, especially when you mix the two. Complaining about them does seem to be allowed, but expressing strongly held convictions is generally considered bad form. Nothing can wreck a dinner party like a heated discussion about taxes, or a debate about what the Bible really says about this or that moral issue. So I guess it's a good thing that we're here in church and not at a dinner party. Because this story from the Gospel of Matthew seems to be about everything you're not supposed to talk about at dinner parties. By the way, the longest sermon title ever. It's about religion and politics, or as I like to think about it, citizenship and discipleship. Most Americans want to keep the two completely separate. We don't want our religion to get political. We don't want our politics to get too religious. The wall of separation between church and state is generally seen as a good thing, as an American innovation. But then there's this story from the Gospel of Matthew in which we are invited, challenged to see things in a new way. Maybe it will even help us prepare for the upcoming election, which is only 16 days away. I can see that some of you are already getting nervous. You could say that it was the Pharisees and the Herodians who started it, with their insincere questions and their not-so-hidden agenda, trying to catch Jesus off guard by buttering him up with compliments. Teacher, we know that you are sincere and teach the way of God in accordance with the truth, and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality. And then here's the zinger. So tell us then, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not? In case you haven't noticed, this is not a real question. This is a trap. If anyone is trying to mix politics and religion, citizenship and discipleship, it's the Pharisees. They are trying to catch Jesus in a contradiction. Jesus is in a tight spot, and that's right where they want him. If Jesus says, don't pay the tax, then they could charge him with sedition, a crime against the state, and haul him off to the Roman authorities and have him put to death as a traitor. If he says, pay the tax, then he would run the risk of not only offending the very people who were so attracted to him, he would also discredit himself with the rampant nationalists, the messianic party known as the Zealots. Jesus really couldn't win. The Pharisees and the Herodians, as they were known, were a political coalition of extraordinary proportion, and they had him right where they wanted him. Standing there in the temple precincts, the very place where things foreign, things like the coin of the empire, were not permitted, Jesus asks them what seems like an innocent question. Show me the coin used to pay the tax, he says. But don't be fooled. The question is anything but innocent. And notice, too, that Jesus doesn't happen to have one himself. Like all faithful Jews of the day, he avoided using the coinage of the kingdom and would never have been caught with one on the grounds of the temple. The graven image of Caesar stamped into the coin was a violation of the second commandment. The inscription proclaiming Caesar as divine was a violation of the first commandment, and utterly blasphemous. But notice who does have a coin handy. It's the religious and political leaders, for in many ways, they were one and the same. They seemed to have no problem with such a compromise, buying and selling with the coin of the empire, even carrying it in this, the most holy places in the land, against their own law. The irony is extraordinary, and their hypocrisy is there for the whole crowd to see. Rubbing a little salt in their wound, Jesus asks, whose image is engraved on it, and what does the inscription say? The response is obvious, of course. the emperor's, Caesar's. Then give it back to him, Jesus says. Now, had Jesus stopped there, our lives would be much less complicated than they are this morning. It would have been like saying that there really are two separate realms in the world, one political and civil, and the other religious. It would have reinforced the idea that there is somehow a difference between the sacred and the secular, and that the church should only dare to comment in its appropriate place. So give to the government the things that belong to the government. After all, they keep you safe and secure, and have a right to your allegiance. And if you are called to serve, you must answer. If you are asked to give, you pay your taxes. It's part of the deal, and everybody wins. Then, and only then, when you have satisfied your obligations to the state, then you can come back to your church and worship, content that God is safely in heaven and all is right with the world. Don't trouble yourselves with political questions, but if you do, make sure you keep all that church stuff separate. Our treasured doctrine of the separation between church and state is often portrayed to mean precisely this, that these two separate realms are to have no impact on one another, and that the church should stick to spiritual things and not meddle in politics or the problems of the world. But that's not the world we live in. And that interpretation severs the relationship, the nerve between faith and life. Just as you and I cannot sit here and pray on Sunday and then leave to spend the next 6 days praying on one another, neither can we proclaim Christ's lordship in our lives and then leave that behind when we go into the voting booth or the boardroom or the classroom or the marketplace, as though we were somehow divided within ourselves. For Jesus did not simply say, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Had he stopped there, we might get away with this notion of separation. But Jesus had more to say, quickly adding, and give to God the things that are God's. In case you haven't noticed, that is a significant limit on what it is that Caesar has a right to ask of any of us. Governments are ordained by God to foster the common good and to place a limit on lawlessness that would destroy that good, but they are not to be given what belongs to God. They are not to be worshipped like we worship God, no matter how much we love and are grateful for this nation which we love. Give to God the things that are God's is not only a limit on the power of the state, it is also a radical rejection of the notion that there is any place in human life that is secular, that there is any place in life where God is not present. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the psalmist proclaims. There is no place in human life where you and I are not called to live out our vocation as God's people, giving to God what belongs to God. And that means even politics. That means that politics is not only an appropriate Christian vocation, but a place where we love and serve God as surely as we do within these walls. Presbyterians have been marked by their passion for proclaiming the lordship of Christ in all areas of life, and particularly in the public arena, working to transform the world so that God's justice and mercy might prevail. It's about more than what happens in this hour here. It was that conviction that caused the pulpits of this emerging country to fan the flames of the American Revolution, so much so that it was called by some the Presbyterian Rebellion. We are Presbyterian in this country in more ways than you may realize. So politics, getting involved out there in the world, is an honorable Christian vocation. And the fact that that causes many of us to snicker or disagree or whatever tells us just how bad things have become. The answer is not to sit on the sidelines, to remain pure, to focus on our faith and avoid the messiness of the world? The answer is to get in the game and be involved. And not as Democrats or Republicans or liberals or conservatives or advocates of the free market economy or redistribution of wealth, but as people of faith, as followers, as disciples of Christ. And not in an effort to create some vision of a Christian nation or to bring morality back into our politics, but to be witnesses to the fact that Jesus Christ is Lord, which is another way of saying that Caesar is not. Think of how our world would change if more of us took politics and civil engagement seriously as an arena in which to live out our faith and to serve God faithfully. Would we still argue about the death penalty and gay marriage and immigration and taxes? Of course we would. Would we still be called upon to compromise? Yes. But giving to God what belongs to God means that you and I may be called to work things out with the very ones with whom we disagree. To speak the truth in love and not with violent words. To model a different kind of persuasion and argument and conversation. One that values other people. One that does not conform to the wisdom of this world. One that serves as a witness to the love of Jesus Christ. You and I should speak out on an issue because we believe it is what the gospel compels us to do. But when we speak, we must speak in our own name and not the name of God. As we take up difficult questions about how to live in ways that foster personal liberty and the common good, we will have differing visions, differing convictions, differing approaches to the problems we encounter. We may even not agree on what the problem really is. Is it because one of us is authentically speaking for God and another is not? No, of course not. I think Abraham Lincoln probably said it best in his second inaugural address, as he spoke to both the North and the South in the midst of the Civil War. Both read the same Bible, he said, and pray to the same God, and each invokes his aid against the other. It may seem strange that any man should dare to ask a just God's assistance in wringing their bread from the sweat of other men's faces. But let us not judge, that we be judged. The prayers of both could not be answered. That of neither has been answered fully. The Almighty has his own purposes. Lincoln's words call to mind the words of the prophet Isaiah. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, says the Lord. Neither are my ways your ways. So let's be humble enough to not equate our vision of the world and our solution to the problems of the world with God's vision, with God's kingdom. When we get involved out there in the world, do all the things that our political process includes, which provides for the improvement and reform of our government and the provision of the common good, let us do it with an open expression of what we believe God calls us to do and be. But let us do it in our own names and not in the name of God. For only God speaks for God. Let us pursue the care, nurture, and preservation of life. But in doing so, let's not be blasphemous enough to suggest that what we believe about a situation, what we say and what we do, is God's word or action. For when that happens, we have co-opted God for our agenda and violated Jesus' warning. We have given to Caesar not the things that are Caesar's, we have given to Caesar the things that are God's. When Jesus answered his opponents, he not only outwitted them, he reminded them that life cannot be so easily compartmentalized into sacred and secular, private and public, religious and political. As those who proclaim that Jesus Christ is Lord, the call to enter into politics, to become involved in our communities, assumes that Jesus is Lord there as well. If we enter with fixed agendas or prophetic zeal, we will probably fail. But if we go there modestly, striving only to serve Christ as faithfully as we can determine in the situation, with an awareness that as important as it is, none of this is ultimate, we will find that Christ is present, leading us into faithfulness, transforming situations, giving us life in the process. And that sounds pretty good to me. So here's the challenge, or the invitation. Invite some friends for dinner. And go ahead and talk about religion and politics, about faith and life, discipleship and citizenship. Talk about how your faith matters out there in the real world and what you hope to do about it as a follower of Jesus Christ. Do that, and God will be glorified. Thanks be to God.